We're here with David Chavez of Assured Strategy, a scaling up coach of 10 years who's passionate about guiding leaders through change to find their freedom. David Chavez, welcome to the Confident ROI Show.
Thanks, Alex.
David, why don't you tell us about, I read your purpose statement there at the start. Why don't you tell us what that means?
Well, I'm passionate about guiding leaders through change to find their freedom because I started and grew a company and ran into the same challenge a lot of the clients I'm working with today experience. And one of the things is I found myself strapped to the company and that I didn't have freedom to go do the things I love to do anymore. And that was being creative and getting new ideas for my company. I didn't even have time to do that anymore. And so one of the things I just became really passionate for after I sold my company and started getting involved with scaling up as a scaling up coach is guiding leaders through the change that they need to make so that they can get back to doing the things that they love and get out of being involved in the operations of the company every day and the day-to-day problems that are coming up inside of their company.
So it's possible to do that, to extract people from that scrum?
Well, it's possible. I mean, yeah, the way you say that, I think everyone struggles a little bit with making it happen, and it is a change process. So you have to go through that change process to get to the other side. But it is possible to do it. It just takes time. It's not going to happen overnight. But at the same time, you didn't get to the stuck the way you are overnight either.
Are there some common things that keep companies stuck?
I think probably the most common one that people don't like to admit to themselves is the owners are usually in the way. You know, like right now I'm growing another company and I find myself in the way all the time. And it's funny, all the stuff I know, I still end up in the middle of getting in the way. So we're the bottleneck. Because we're at the top of the bottle. And I think that I see that more than anything else. And that's probably the greatest challenge that you're usually dealing with right when you come in and start helping a company is getting the leaders at the top to realize that they're stopping the growth or they're stopping the change from happening.
How can you give an example of like what kind of form, what does that take? You mentioned you're getting in the way of your firm growing. How does that show up in a specific way?
Well, it's funny because we were talking about it yesterday. I was meeting with the lady who's heading up the operations for us, and we were talking a little bit, and we were talking about meetings, and we have an administrative meeting every week. And the bottom line is she felt I was minimizing her at times. And I don't think I'm intentionally doing it. But what we realized is that I really didn't even need to be in the meeting. And why was I there? And I was like, that's a great question. Why am I there? And why am I making these decisions? So I think that sometimes people draw you into making decisions, even when you know the answer or they know the answer, because they don't want to be accountable to the result. So I don't think they intentionally do it, but I think that they do it just because they're trying to make sure they're making the best decision. And as leaders, a lot of times we get stuck in our patterns that we're in. I know you talk a lot about this in your book, but you get stuck in those patterns that you're in, and you're so good at making decisions, which makes you a great leader, that you keep on making decisions even when you shouldn't be involved in it. And so you're overriding or undermining people without even realizing that you're doing it, because somebody just comes up and casually asks you a question and you answer it casually.
It's almost like a survival instinct. I mean, for the company to survive beyond the early in phases, the founder's got to be involved.
Yep.
And there's nobody rings a bell that says, well, you don't need to be in this meeting anymore. And that can be a tough, was it an awkward moment for you? Or
no, it's a refreshing moment for me because I know what I know. when we came to the conclusion, I think I'm the one that said, why am I there?
Yeah.
You know, because she was saying I was undermining her. I go, well, I'm not intentionally undermining you. A question comes up and I just answer it. And, so I said, I didn't mean to do that. And I wasn't aware I was doing it because it's just in my normal behavior. And so we just decided it was best that I didn't go. And I think that that's great because I shouldn't be making those decisions, and I want them to make the decisions, and I want them to screw them up, and I want them to fail at them sometimes so that they can get to the other side and learn what they need to do to make the best decisions over time. So,
and so how do you help companies with that process? What sometimes people say, well, why do I need a coach? And why do I need someone to help me? I read the book. And so,
well, I think that there's the concepts in the book, which are the tools and the process, but then there's a behavioral component to it. So you know this already about me. I'm a CPA by trade. So I love process. I mean, I think processes are absolutely fabulous. And to me, I wish everything could be processed. But at the same time, let me take a back step. So when I was helping clients set up process as a CPA, what I found is that sometimes those processes weren't as effective as they could have been, or they didn't work at all. It was because the behavioral component that goes along with changing the process wasn't willing to change. So you can put in all the new processes you want. If my people aren't changing their actual behavior around to the process that you're trying to put in, then the process is worthless. And it's just a lot of wasted time and effort. So you need to help them understand why this process really works really well and what's really in it for them.
And so two things. One, you mentioned the book, and I mentioned Scaling Up, that you're a coach in that, and that's a book, and probably what you're referring to there, reading the book, Scaling Up.
Mm-hmm.
And second, on the behaviors, can you give an example like of a behavior you've seen that just shows up frequently that you, I'm assuming you're helping to identify for the leader?
Well, So let me take a couple of steps back, and then I'll come back to your question because I think there's some context that we can put in to make it a little bit easier for your listeners to understand. So first of all, there's three things that all companies really have to have. And I believe that these three things, that if they do not do these three things, everything else that they're trying to accomplish really doesn't matter a whole lot. So number one, you have to have a clear purpose. I gave you my purpose at the beginning of this, guiding leaders through change to find their freedom. Number two, they have to have core values that they live and behave around. So the core values are a handful of rules. It's not necessarily hundreds of them. It's probably 3 to 6 is probably pretty normal. After you get past 5, it gets a little complicated for people to remember them. 3 is probably better. But what those rules are, the behavior rules are because we have metric rules, but a lot of times we don't have behavioral rules to guide us. And so people's behavior is out of control sometimes inside the companies. It's my way and I want to do it my way. And where that comes from is a lack of a BHAG. So, companies that don't have a big, hairy, audacious goal, uh-huh, which comes from the book Good to Great. When they don't have that big, hairy, audacious goal, I'm trying to get, let's say the big, hairy, audacious goal is 20 years out or 10 years out or however long it is that you set yours. 10 years should probably be the minimum that you had set it out there, but you're setting it out there in some point in the future. And let's just equate it to like hiking up a mountain, and you're trying to get to the top of the mountain. The BHAG is the top of the mountain. Okay. So when you're going up the mountain, if you don't give clarity of where the top of the mountain is, people are going to wander off and go to the direction that they think they need to go to get to the top of the mountain. and not necessarily the chart your path you're trying to get them to follow to get to the top of the mountain. And so what ends up happening is that they get off path and they start to do what they think's important instead of what's really important. Okay. So because I'm not giving them clarity on why we're here every day, our purpose, where we're trying to go, my BHAG, and the rules of behavior, the way you're acting and behaving on a regular basis. I speak a lot, as you know, and one of the things I say to these groups is that when your employees are in the bathroom throwing up because you're talking about your BHAG, your core values, and your purpose, because they've heard it all so many times and they've heard the same old stupid stories over and over again that they're just getting nauseous from you telling it again, then you probably are doing it right. But what ends up happening is when leaders oftentimes they get to the point where the employees are literally throwing up in the bathroom because they're talking about these things again, they quit doing it.
Well, it always ends up in the bathroom with core values and purpose. They're either dead words on the wall.
Oh, that's good.
Or they're barfing. Yeah. But something's going to happen in the bathroom. That's the test.
Good. Great point. Yeah, exactly. They're either overused or they're underused. Yeah.
But there's really not, for those two pieces, there's really not a happy medium. It's just either all the time and talked about in way of life, or they're at some point of dying. They're either dead or forgotten about, or they start to decay pretty quickly, don't they?
If they're not at the forefront of people's mind, they're going to just let them go over time. And so that's why those three things need to be talked about constantly. If I could get leaders to talk about those, like I say, until people are getting nauseous around them from talking about them, they find that things inside of their company are, the decisions are very congruent with where they're trying to go. Because, you know, I don't think any employee really comes in the company and starts on their first day and goes, yeah, let me get inside of that company and really screw it up. You know, I don't think they're sitting there saying that. They're most of the time they're saying, oh, I have a new opportunity. This is a new thing. And, you know, we diminish their value by being in the company and some of the things that we're doing and things that are going wrong and us not creating clarity of where we're trying to go. I've struggled with that myself, even knowing what everything I know. So why do you need a coach? Is to remind you of the things and bring consciousness to you of the things you're not paying attention to. So, you know, I've given several behavioral profiles, and I've given thousands of them, matter of fact. And when I'm giving somebody a behavioral profile, I share with them, depending on what you're reading, there's 80 to 95% people, there's varying opinions out there, say that 80 to 95% of your behaviors in your subconscious mind, you really have no control over what you're doing because your brain is just recognizing those things over and over again. And so you have to instill it in everybody's brain, that pattern of BHAG, purpose, why you're here, and then how you're behaving every day. So you just want to reinforce those things constantly to keep them at the forefront of people's consciousness.
And to get them into the non-conscious.
Well, it's to get them in the non-conscious, and it takes a long time, and you have turnover all the time. So you're never going to be successful at getting it in every single person's mind unless you're constantly coming up with new ways and you're constantly talking about them. So I may have some people on the team that's heard it way too many times, and then some people that are on the team that aren't that long with the company that are hearing it for the first or maybe second time.
Sure.
So
can you give an example, any stories of a company and how they were able to really bring their purpose and core values and BHAG alive and what that meant on the other side, maybe turning on the lights or how it any creative things that you mentioned stories. Are stories useful in communicating these?
Most definitely. There's always core values and purpose always relate back to stories that people have in their life, something that impacted them, something that shaped the way that they're thinking. So I think that there's a lot of stories that people tell that can tell about core values. You get the stories too as you're going along, as you're starting to live the core values. You're getting stories where people don't live them, but you're also getting stories where people actually do live them. And what you're doing with the stories, I find that when you start to tell stories, it brings the core values to life even more, because people understand how to apply that behavior to those types of situations that the stories are centered around.
Yeah.
So, but the bad part is, a little bit of the bad part is today with technology, people are getting worse and worse at storytelling. So sometimes getting somebody to learn how to tell stories is not very easy. I look back at it when I first started, became a Gazelle scaling up coach. We're switching from Gazelles to scaling up right now. So I still say Gazelle sometimes, but when I first became a Gazelles coach, I don't think I was a very good storyteller. I think I'm better now. I don't think I'm the best storyteller in the world, but I am good enough to where people understand the stories that I'm telling now, where sometimes I would forget exactly where I was trying to take them and trying to get to the end result. And so, it's just something you have to do. I'm working with a client down in San Diego right now, and it's funny because he does a weekly broadcast because he has 325 employees, and so he and all in three different states. He's, you know, so he gets on the internet and does a video every Monday morning for 5 minutes, and he sends it out to everybody, and he's talking about general things. But one of the three things he's constantly talking about is purpose, core values, and BHAG. Where are they trying to go? Why are they there every day? And how do they behave as they're going about doing it? And it's really made a big difference. So he's done probably, he does it every week. He's done probably about 15 of them now. And I hadn't seen any of the videos because I'd asked to be put on the list. I didn't see it. So he sent all of them to me at once. So I watched the first one, and then I watched the latest one. The first one was a disaster. The latest one was just really well done. And I called him right afterwards, and we were joking. And I said, "So have you learned anything?" And he said, "I've learned so much by watching." Watching myself, he said, "I thought I was a good storyteller, and I found out how bad I really was when I watched the first few videos. And what it made me do is made me focus on getting better at telling stories and what I'm trying to get as the outcomes inside my company." And he goes, "It's just been fantastic." So
that's ironic. Technology's made us worse storytellers, but technology helped him become a better storyteller.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about like with text messages.
Sure. No. Yeah.
Quick.
It is, but it's also, we're also now, I mean, the cost to record a video and distribute it across the world is literally almost nothing, right? Yeah. And so we can do this, and these tools make it different. You know, it's, we both remember writing memos. These are the new core values. You're getting those soon to be dead words on a piece of parchment, and now we can get them through video and get those stories. There's something I've heard stories from leaders where someone confronted them on them not living their core values in the company. And it seems to have some a life-changing impact on them. Have you seen that?
Well, I've seen it for myself, but I've also seen it for my clients too. That's probably the best thing that ever happens to a CEO or a senior leader inside of a company. Is when the employees come back and tell you that you're not living a core value. That's when you know you have a lot of power in your company, because, and what I'm talking about, I'm not talking about the fist power. I'm talking about the power of your people owning what they're doing, because They're going to hold you accountable just as you hold them accountable. And that's what that's really saying. And the trust level's high enough to where they know how important these core values are and how much they're wrapped around the company, that it doesn't matter that you're the CEO. It doesn't matter that you're the CFO. You're held accountable just like everybody else to living and behaving the core values. And I don't care if I'm the CEO or you're the CEO or whoever is, we all fail at them sometimes because our own behaviors get in the way.
Sure. So. Everyone talks about holding people accountable, but it's rarely, they're rarely talking that they want to be held accountable.
Yeah. Well, accountability is probably the biggest problem you're running into almost all the time. So,
well, let's talk about that on the other side of the break.
Okay.
There is a magazine that accompanies this show. So if you want to stay up to date on the latest ideas and trends, you don't have to just tune in every week. You can turn on to the new magazine that accompanies it, Confident ROI. Discover the right tool to improve your company and read articles like the one in the latest issue from Vern Harnish, the famous Vern Harnish on strategy, or Top Grading with Dr. Brad Smart. There's even a cure for your hiring headache in there, and even information on systems like the EOS system that we've talked about so many others times here on this show and others. All of that and more you can read confidently to find out real-life tools to improve your company and take it to the next level. Just go find it. It's free. That's right. The four-letter word, F-R-E-E, at confidentroi.com. Just like it sounds, confident, R-O-I.
And we're back with David Chavez today. And we were, before the break, we were talking about building the trust level and holding people accountable when leaders are confronted with that they're not living the core values of the company. And now we wanted to switch gears and talk about, we mentioned Scaling Up, the book by Vern Harnish, a couple times today. And David's been a coach of that system for going on 10 years. And I'm sure some people are going, what's scaling up? Or I heard about that and that. So David, what is scaling up?
Well, scaling up is a mid-market strategic planning system. And what it does is gives you a way to think about your company so you can scale and grow it and still keep your vision alive inside of the company as you're doing that. So the main document of the Scaling Up program is a one-page strategic plan. I think that the Scaling Up was the first one that had a one-page strategic plan, and a one page is a little deceiving because really it's on one 11 by 17 sheet of paper. So
it's foldable.
Yeah. It's still on one sheet. So, but what it does is it gives you a way to think about your business and communicate where you're trying to go. So we were talking about BHAG in the last segment, and BHAG's really important to the overall communication to the team of the company to make sure everybody knows where you're trying to go. The strategic plan are the steps we're doing to get to the BHAG. So that's the simple way of putting it. And what it does is it makes it really easy to understand what actions do I need to be taking today, this quarter, this year, 3 years from now, to get to that place I'm trying to get that's 10 years out. And what the plan does is it organizes that. So it gives me, so as you're working through it, it gives you a way of getting back to what do I need to be doing today? What are those activities that are going to lead to getting to where I'm trying to go?
Sounds pretty simple. So
it sounds simple. But the more people you have a greater problem, you know. So if you have two people, you have two relationships. If you have three people, that turns into six relationships. And if you have four people, that turns into 24. And then if you add a fifth person, now you have 120 relationships going. So what ends up happening is that as you're adding people, you think you're adding one more person, but you're adding a whole bunch of new relationships into your company. And sometimes those new relationships, if they don't have clarity on where they're trying to go, people start doing what they think is best instead of where we're trying to go. So,
and how does that come out when, how does that come out when people think they're doing the best? And does it come out in different ways? But maybe they're not, it's not going in the same direction.
Yeah, we talked about this last segment too, is I don't think employees come into your company going, hey, I want to hurt it. They're trying to do what they know because the clarity's not there. So they're trying to fill in that gap that the owner's not providing. So, or the CEO or the senior leadership of the company isn't providing them.
You're more likely to have a vacuum in terms of what to do and over communication of information, or that makes sense. Have you ever come across the opposite of a vacuum?
No, I've never really come across where there's too much communication going on. Usually it's not enough. I know just from my own past, I know I thought everyone knew exactly where I was going and exactly what I wanted to do. And I thought, I talked about it three times. What, they didn't get it the first or second or third time? So what's the matter with them? So I just think sometimes we think that people receive our communication the way we're delivering it, but there's so many different ways to communicate that people interpret it their own way and change the meaning of it in their own way. And so getting clarity and talking about it often creates that clarity.
Yeah, I have this feeling sometimes that people think when they give instructions or direction, it's almost like they're loading computer code. You know, I sent you those instructions. They should be clearly, your email to you sequentially, you should have implemented that. And it's just, even computers, when you load code, there's bugs. But we think the human mind better integrates thousands of emails.
That's right. And that's sort of what the one-page plan's for, is to create that list of what we're actually working on. So if I get lost 3 weeks from now and I'm starting to work on the other thing and I'm something else and I'm looking at my one-page plan, I can ask myself, is this behavior matching up, or is this action that I'm taking matching up where we're trying to go? You know, so, and again, we're talking about the strategic aspects of the company. So there's still the normal operations going on, but we're trying to get to the really critical, not urgent, but important things that need to be done to build that structure or build the discipline or build the intelligence level for that next step we're trying to go to.
Could you give an example of like with a company, you can remove the name, but what did you have to build for them to be able to move to that next level?
Yeah, I think I'll give a general, and then I'll think about stories as I'm going along the way. But I think that probably one of the biggest problems we're having right now, and it sort of relates to probably one of the biggest problems that most companies are having right now, it's turnover, hiring people. 2 years ago, it wasn't hiring people. It was hiring the best people. And then because I had a lot of applicants, but now I'm having clients tell me they're not getting anything when they're putting ads out. And so I think that it's a little bit of getting the right people on, and that's always a struggle for most companies. So one of the things that I see companies doing pretty quickly as I'm getting in the door is they have to get a training department set up to actually onboard people correctly and to really get them trained on what their expectations of that long-term vision are. What do you need to be good at your job to do a really good job for us? Because I think most companies just bring people in and they just say they'll get on the job training and they don't have training programs. So it takes people 6 to 9 months to become effective. And how do I shorten that time?
They gotta cross the lines before they figure out where the line, the invisible lines are.
Right. And, it, you know, and in the smaller company, as you're scaling and growing a company, you know, when you're at 20 employees, there's, that's really how people are being hired and trained. But then once you get up to 100 employees, you know, that becomes a lot more costly. And then it's, there's a lot more subjectivity involved because now I have several people, maybe one or two people removed from me that are out there making those decisions on what people should be doing. And if they're on the wrong path, then they're putting that other person on the wrong path also.
You know, you say train department, some people, you know, I think back to the beginning of my career and that meant a 3-ring binder and sitting in a classroom for 8 hours for a couple of days. Is it what are you seeing? How are people doing training now?
Well, a lot of it, and again, video is probably one of the best things out there, and audio, just like you're doing right now, walking through some how to do something with somebody. I had a client that actually was an ice company, and they carve ice, and they actually made videos of how to harvest the ice because it takes 3 days to grow a block of ice that they use for these ice sculptures, and they were breaking them. And so every time they broke one, the cost wasn't in the actual ice block itself. It was the loss of the ice block that cost them more than
3 days.
That's right. And so the time factor in that. So what they did is they did a whole video on how to use the, they actually use car jacks to get the blocks out because they're so heavy. And they did a video showing it. Their breakage went down. I think the quarter before we got there, we started working with them. I think they broke, I want to say it was like 39. And the quarter after that, after we were there, they had only had 11 breakages that whole quarter.
Wow.
So they had reduced it significantly just by making a video and then having their employees watch it. And they had a high turnover because it's a low wage job. And so they would have people watch it. And so then they had some breakage that went on again. And I said, hey, have them watch it again, you know, about a month later, have them watch it again, because now they're starting to put their own ideas into it and get them back on to what's the right way to harvest the ice. And so that's a great example of like things that you can do to make it really simple. And this video was only 10 minutes long.
And did they do it themselves or did they hire?
Did it themselves with an iPhone.
So there's almost no marginal cost. That's a pretty good return on investment.
Yeah, and that they all they did was put all the videos out in the shop on a just a basic computer, and so you could watch them anytime. And all of them are about 10 minutes long. So they made a whole bunch of different ones for the different routine tasks that they have. And what they try to share with their employees is, look, once you start working here a while, you need to go back and watch the videos because you start adding your own ideas into it and you get away from doing what we need you to do.
Yeah, I want to come back to that. Let's come back to that. People starting to have... When you're working on what is important, how to do things, how that natural kind of that natural decay in how things are done, you know, turnover and that. Let's finish up on scaling up first and talking about, you talk about the one page strategic plan. Any other key components that would help people if they picked up the book or someone was talking about it so they could understand the different how it's organized? And
yeah, the book's organized in 4 different quadrants. The 4 different quadrants are people, how to get the right people on the bus, and how to get the right people in your company, how to get them doing the right things. So it's a lot to do with people. Then strategy, how to set your strategy, what strategy really is. I'm shocked with how many companies I go into and they think tactical execution is strategy. They're so buried in tactical execution that they don't really have any strategic objective with their company. So that's the most enlightening thing I've found doing this for the last 10 years is how many companies don't have any idea what it is. But when you talk to them, they think they have it down. And it's a little more complicated than they think it is. It just takes time to get your strategy down too. And I'm not trying to say that it's so hard that you can't figure it out. They just mix up the two often.
Well, you don't have to have a strategy to open for business.
No, you don't. Most of the time when business is open, it's usually a great technician that opens the business. They're great at doing what they do. Matter of fact, they're so great at it that they become obsessed with the perfection of it. And that obsession with the perfection causes them not to grow. So, because they get caught up with doing everything perfect all the time instead of just getting it done what the customer may need versus what they want to deliver.
Right.
So, and those two things sometimes are out of whack. So,
and are they sometimes, have you ever seen where a founder surprised at what his people can do, their people can do without them?
that happens all the time. So one of the parts of our plan, it comes from the Great Game of Business, and it's the critical number. And the critical number are small things that everyone in the company can participate in. And it's usually things that people find beneath them to do. So I was walking in a casino with the president of the casino once, and we're walking through and we're talking about the casino and what he's trying to do with it. And he tells me, so we get into conversation about customer service, and he tells me that his customer service scores went down 1 point in the last 3 months. And he's really concerned about it because they always had such great customer service. And we ended up having a conversation about it. And he asked me what we talked about critical numbers. And I said, well, what are you measuring? And he said, we're measuring the customer service score. I told him, I said, well, that's a lagging number. It's not a leading number. And he said, okay, well, what should I be measuring? I said, why don't you measure smiles? How many times do your people smile at the guest? He goes, well, that's really stupid. And I go, okay, it's really stupid. And we walked and we're talking still. And I just let it go. And then he said, so let's get back to that critical number. He said, so I'm using this, the customer service scores. And so any other ideas? And I said, well, I don't want to give you any other ideas because my ideas are stupid. And I said, and he started laughing at me. He goes, okay, I got it. And I said, just try it. I mean, see if it works. And he said, well, will people lie? All those questions that come up. And turns out his customer service score went up 1.5 points in 1 month of starting to measure smiles. And what he was got caught up with and concerned with is that people would lie how much they smile, and it would be perceived as fake just because they were smiling. Well, when they started doing it, it probably was a little fake. But some of the employees, after they started getting the warm response back that they were getting from the customers that were good people, they just started to want to do it. And it wasn't something that I was doing because somebody told me I had to do. It was something that I could do because I wanted to do it, and the response was great. And so it just took off as customer service scores. And so about every 5 quarters, he brings a smile back into play. So, and he's done it 3 times now, and he said, every time I bring it back in, it pushes my customer service scores back up again.
He circulates it so it doesn't get stale.
That's right.
And brings it back.
So he brings it back. It's done it 3 times now. Just talked to him the other day and he said he's done it 3 times now.
So on scaling up, we talked about strategy. I think we talked about people.
The next stage is execution. So how do I execute that strategy? That's the thing I said that people often mistake for strategy. So what is my execution? How am I going to go about doing it? What are my goals? What are my critical numbers that we were just talking about? And then the last thing is cash. How do I maintain cash flow inside of my company? And then how do I not grow too fast, to grow. I tell people this often, and it really shocks them a lot, that more businesses go out of business from growing too fast than too slow.
In what way?
They run out of cash. That lead time that you need for that growth to collect the money back, and we call it the cash conversion cycle in the Gazelle system or the scaling up system. It's the time I spend a dollar to the time I get a dollar back. So that gap of time really costs, people aren't aware of that a lot of times. They don't even know what that gap of time really is. And so they don't understand that if I grow more than 20%, it's going to eat up my X dollars of my cash flow. And I use 20% as a general number. Some people can afford to grow 50%. Some people can only afford to grow 10% a year.
Depends on the length, how long it takes you to convert a sale into cash.
Yeah, and to get the dollar back from the time I'm spending it to the time I get a dollar back. Because that gap of time really dictates that, because how much reserve do I have and how much am I eating up? And what ends up happening oftentimes when people are starting to grow is they go out and get themselves, you know, you're an accountant by trade too. And you've seen it over and over again where they get themselves so far extended that they're in debt up to their rear end and they just can't see even a way out of it.
Right.
And this is what usually that came from growing too fast. I would say 9 times out of 10, just over my career, watching this and going inside of companies and looking at their cash, it's because, you know, we scaled up, we hired 20 people because we wanted, we had 100 people and we wanted to grow by 20%. So we hired 20 people. They didn't really think about, you know, the strategy of it is, what am I trying to do with my customers? What do they need from me? And how am I going to deliver that and tie it all back? You know, they may do it in some sense, but not as in depth as they probably should be doing it. Paying attention.
And so scaling up has some tools to help people.
Most definitely. Those areas.
All right.
So like the cash conversion cycle, there's a tool for that. That's free. You can get that on the Scaling Up website. The one-page strategic plan, that's out there for free. There's several of the tools are out there for free. You don't even need to coach to download them. Any of the tools inside of the Scaling Up book, you can download for free. But there's a whole host that we have on top of that to help get a little more granular that we bring as coaches to the table.
All right. Well, let's take our final break here, and we'll be right back.
That's right, because we can't put off this final commercial anymore. It's coming right at you. That's the webinar that's coming up on September 18th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, a couple hours earlier in Hawaii. You can sign up for this webinar at confidentroi.com. And what will you hear? Well, they'll discuss how to uncover the hidden force pulling companies into dysfunction and creating frustration. Ouch. How to implement straightforward tools to identify and remove the real source of that pain. And they'll talk about and explore eliminating the most common behavior that keeps a company from becoming an unstoppable force. Powerful thoughts, interesting conversation. You can join in on this webinar, free webinar, September 18th, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Simply sign up at confidentroi.com. And if you happen to hear it later, if you're listening to this as a podcast, you say, darn, I missed that thing. Hey, we'll record it. It'll be on confidentroi.com along with the rest of these shows and the magazine. Lots of stuff, lots of reasons to go there. Confidentroi.com.
And we're back with David Chavez. And while we wrap up our discussion of scaling up, David, anything, someone out there, maybe they've read the book or they've seen Vern speaking about scaling up, and they're like, you know, scaling up right for my company, what would you tell them?
Well, I would first of all tell them that it's not right for every company, but it is right for every company at some point in their growth cycle. I think really small companies could do themselves a real disservice by taking the Scaling Up book and applying everything to the company, because it's too much for a small company to handle. So I think that you would have to sort of figure out what elements of it that you could use and which that you probably need to go, don't need to really worry about right now. I would tell you that the three things that I talked about apply to every company, no matter what size, even if you're a one person show watching this or listening to this, excuse me. So once you really reach about 5 million, this book's starting to really come into play for you. By the time you're 20 million, this book is definitely in play for you. And it's probably applicable all the way up to about a billion. That's the system's range. Anybody over 20 million, I think that all my research and everything I've read, this is probably the best system out there. It just has the longevity. It has, there's just tons and tons of companies that you may even be aware of out in the general market that are using it. Examples are Rackspace, good example. There's AppleTree that John Radcliffe, who's heading up the coaching arm now, sold. There's tons of companies out there that are using Scaling.
Can you give some examples? You know, to say the company name, and what have you seen in terms of results with people implementing Scaling Up?
The results are most of the time when I'm working with them, I'm always trying to get them a 3x return on their investment. And where I really try to focus on is in the first 3 months, getting them that back. There's some really simple things that they can do to really get the power going. It's easy to get the power going, though. The harder part is keeping it going over that time. And you talked a little bit about it at the very beginning, where you get some momentum going. You got to keep that momentum going. And that's the real hard part that over time. And that's why I work with people generally for a whole year before I.
And does that tie into over communicating the purpose and the vision and
most of
the BHAG? I mean, it's not one and done and one 2 day or some offsite meetings and answering some questions. It's that repeated communication of where they're going and why they're doing it and how they're going to do it?
Yeah, really, like the reason we're there is to help with that discipline that needs to be to break those patterns that you're in. So you build patterns in your life, we call them habits. So your company has habits too, and some of them need to shift. And what we're there for is really is to shift those habits.
All right. So, David, I know you use some other concepts besides scaling up. And if you'd like to share any of those, you know, which ones you find provide the best return for people's time? Not necessarily, you know, books aren't that expensive, but the time to do it, as well as I like to call the brain strain. How hard do they got to strain it to get a concept? Can you share your favorites or a favorite with the?
I probably have a few favorites. The Five Dysfunctions of a Team by Lencioni. I would tell you that that's probably the book, the most applicable book right when I'm walking in the door. That's the book I'm concentrating on at first. I've been using it for about 10 years now. And it's the book is just nails it, what the dysfunction is inside of most companies and how teams are just not communicating effectively with one another and not having the elements alive to really get the results they're looking for. I have a lot of companies tell me that, hey, we have good results, and I just refer back to the first sentence in the Good to Great book, which is one of my favorite sentences ever written in a book. The enemy of great is good. So, okay, well, you're a good company. Do you want to be a great one? So,
all right. And I know we've talked over the years and you like, how many business books do you read a year?
I probably read 4 a month on average. I have some months where I'm probably down to two. That's probably a weak month for me. You know, it's my job to really read books. So I do read a lot, but and also try to figure out what my clients should be reading so they don't have to read the volume I read. I want them to try to read one a month. That's where I'm trying to get the, at least the executive team to get up to.
Yeah. And you had mentioned to me, you have a policy of if you read a book, you won't share it with a client, no matter how great it is, for at least 3 months. You embargo it. Are there any currently embargoed?
Well, there's a lot that's embargoed. I'm not sure I want to talk about all of them, but...
give us one.
I'll give you one. So one that I just saw the guy speak, and I've just found it fascinating. The New Rules of Marketing and PR by David Merriman Scott. This is sixth edition with that book. And I'll tell you, I've read it in the past, previous editions, but it's really interesting to me how much of this marketing stuff I do not do. And then also how much of this marketing that our clients don't do, because most of the clients in the mid-market, you know, they're a little bit older that own these larger companies, and they're just not as technology savvy as like some of the kids that are coming out of college and starting businesses, where to them, Facebook is second nature, LinkedIn second nature to them, where I have trouble remembering to get into Facebook.
The passwords you got to remember.
Exactly. I think that, and then also what he's talking about is that it's not the traditional methods any longer that are applicable. So, you know, the PR and the way it used to work, it's just not applicable anymore.
And is the baseline of what's required for marketing, is that elevated?
No, it's actually come down. It's easier, but you have to build the disciplines into what you're doing that he's talking about, and he makes it actually really simple to understand. The great thing I love about the book, and you've known me a while, so one thing I really look for inside of books is, are they telling me how to apply it? You can write all the theoretical crud you want, I want to know how I use this. And that's one great thing that this book does. So
awesome. All right. Well, David, appreciate you coming into the office today and having this conversation. You know, you're usually on the move in between clients. How can people get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me on our website, assuredstrategy.com. And also you can get a hold of me via email or phone. My office number is 702-421-3212. And my email address is david.chavez@assuredstrategy.com.
And of course, we'll have that in the show notes page. David, thanks for coming on.
All right. Well, thank you, Alex.